This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
There's going to be a lot of motions in the next many months until this thing actually gets to trial. Is there any way, do you have anything in your mind when you look at this and you try to predict the future of what direction this is going to go? What kind of motions do you think she's going to present leading up? Is there any way of knowing that or having an idea this far in advance?
Well, yeah. I mean, I will be shocked if she does not file a motion to suppress the DNA based on, or to quash the arrest. One of the two, like, germane to the IgG issue. Mm-hmm. All right. Because it's going to get denied, like, flat out, because right now, as the law exists, Koberger does not have standing to say, you know, that my expectation of privacy was violated, got the DNA from, you know, a third party through the IgG stuff, you know, through the database. Now, if they can show, because, I mean, they're going to attack that. They're definitely going to attack it. We heard it through the witnesses that testified back on the 18th that, you know, they're claiming that law enforcement accessed private databases, which is a no-no. You know, so, and like, the argument is, and what the state thing is, like, look, we're not using that DNA. We're not using the IgG profile. That's a, like, we have his DNA now, and we know that it's a match to what is on the sheet. So we don't even need to put that in. From the defense side of it, they're saying, okay, I understand that. But to get to there, we have to go back to what you did to get to that point where you got his DNA. And that's what you're attacking, because everything, like, moves in a straight line. And what happened with IgG happened prior to them getting Koberger's DNA. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting, like, and it'll get denied because of that standing issue. They're going to say, as the law exists right now, he has no standing to make that claim for someone else's DNA being pulled.
Sure.
You know, it's called standing in the law. He does not have standing. It is, like, this is the thing that fascinates me more than anything. Like, this is the thing on my Twitter, which everyone should follow, which is defense_diaries, by the way.
Yep.
Like, that I'm always debating with people on, like, kind of law enforcement, pro-law enforcement side is like, oh, it's amazing. It's incredible technology. It's such an advancement in, you know, crime fighting. We just have to let them run wild with it. And it is an incredible advancement. I definitely want it to be used. It can, you know, that they'll be able to do so much with it. They'll be able to identify does. They'll be able to, you know, solve cold cases. All those things are amazing. What I'm suggesting is not that they don't use it, but that there's rules that they have to have probable cause going in, that they can't just go in. Because the thing about the database, in terms of all databases for DNA, those are only going to continue to grow massively. Mm-hmm. You know, like those databases are not huge right now. None of them are. CODIS is not huge. In terms of, if you're looking at the population of the United States in comparison to how many profiles they have in any of those databases, it's nominal. Sure. You know, but that will continue to grow. And as that grows, it becomes easier and easier for law enforcement to just say, hey, let's just do some IgG, or let's just check, you know, just jump into the DNA database, you know, because it's an end around from getting the defendant's DNA, which they have to have a warrant for. You know what I'm saying? Like in some states, you have to be convicted in order to get it. It depends on the state. It depends on the jurisdiction. So, like, that's an end around. And you know, like, people are making the arguments, oh, well, you know, like, the genealogical side of it is so time consuming. And it's not anymore. This isn't like when my grandmother, like, must have spent hours and hours digging through old newspapers and trying to figure out my family tree, which she did for me, like, when she was dying of leukemia. And it was like, it's, I still treasure the thing. It's not like that anymore. Like with the computers and the ability to access information that we have now, it's a much faster process. So they're overselling how hard the genealogical side of it is. And the bottom line is, there's an argument to be made, and I will die on this hill, that we do have a privacy expectation in our family's DNA. Because I think we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
So if I'm beating a dead horse, I apologize. But in terms of, you know, my family line, I could go back 1,000 years in my family line, and every male in my line shares the same YSTR DNA.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's it. Like that. And so the question becomes, because people keep giving like the pushback I'll get when I'm debating it is, okay, well, look, it's the same way. It's identical to what's going on with like a text message. So say I was to text, you know, my buddy, I'm like, oh, like I'm going to kill Tony Bruschi because he's really getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
And I send it off. Right. And then it's sent off. There's a voluntary act by me. I've typed it. And then I hit the send button, knowing that it is going to a third party, that being my character. And at that point, the courts have ruled that I have lost any expectation of privacy in that particular text message because I sent it off. Like that was my act. I did that, wanted to keep it a secret. If I wanted my privacy just totally intact, then I don't send the text. You know, maybe I go and I tell my friend in his ear. You know what I'm saying? So with the DNA stuff, that's not the case. I have no control over the fact that my entire family line shares my DNA on the male side, that YSTR, you know, so it's a different argument and it's such brand new. We've never dealt with it. It's never been dealt with. Like I've been battling with my buddy Brett from the prosecutors and we've been going back and forth on it.
Yeah.
And it's a great legal debate and it's such an amazing tool for law enforcement that we just are going to have to put a governor on it in terms of limiting how it's used. Because ultimately, if it turns into, law enforcement will just say, forget all the old fashioned police work. Let's just go straight to that.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is that DNA is transferred so easily, Tony. Like, you would not believe how many people's DNA that you have. Like, if you go out fully showered, fresh clothes, you know, you got your shoes are all, you know, you've got them like all buffed up and you're just clean as can be. By the time you came home from that day, you would have, I can't even name the number in terms of how many other people's DNA you would have on your clothes, on your shoes, on your hands, because it's so simply transferred. So it creates a very dangerous, slippery slope if we're not going to have it governed. Like my whole thing is like I don't want people thinking I don't want them to use it. I do. I really do. But they have to have a search warrant. They have to have probable cause. Do some good old-fashioned police work. Build enough to where you could go in into a judge and say, okay, this is what we got on this guy. And we want to be able to search the IgG databases. We want to go in there. We want to go into, you know, anything that is available to us as law enforcement, as long as it's not private, and we want to be able to do it. And then we want to build the genealogical profile based on that. And if they have the probable cause, just say granted, boom. And then there they go. So then at least we have some kind of control over what law enforcement is going to do. And look, I want crime solved. I really do. Yeah. I want Jane and John Doe's to get their names back. I want all that to happen, but there has to be rules. We can't have it turn into a free-for-all because I care about our civil liberties as a country, and people are just not understanding what an impact that would have if that goes just unchecked. Mm-hmm. It's just a huge amount of power for law enforcement that already has a huge amount of power. With those guns and those badges, they could do a lot. They have a lot of power. So, you know, that's like, to me, that'll be something that's going to get filed. It'll be denied without question, but it's being filed that it can go up. It can hit the appellate level. Ultimately, I think it needs to end up at the Supreme Court level because that's who has to weigh in on it to kind of make the rules. Like my buddy Brett keeps saying, oh, well, you know, that's the legislature. It just needs to make a statute. I'm like, okay. But what happens with statutes is they get litigated. Like, you know, lawmakers are people that we elect into office, okay? And then they draft statutes. And then once it makes it through the House and the Senate and it becomes law, at that point, it's a statute, like even on a federal level or on a state level. So if that happens, the first case that comes up where that statute is going to be challenged, because remember, the law is all about interpretation. Like two different people where you've got a state and a defendant, or in that, you know, in the defense case, the defense attorney are going to be looking at the same statute and they're going to be interpreting it differently. What does this clause mean? What does this word mean? That's what the whole practice of law is about. That is entirely what lawyers do, is they battle about interpretation of statutes. That is our job, literally. So, you know, when that statute gets made, it's still going to have to get litigated to get fleshed out. That's why precedent exists. That's why when you're hearing about cases, like when you hear the famous cases that we all know about, Miranda, that was a Supreme Court case. That's what established that law.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, we need that to go up the chain. So she needs to file that just so it can get denied. And if he's convicted, that'll go up. That'll be an appellate issue. It'll go up the flagpole. So I fully anticipate that she'll file something with regard to that. You know, and it's kind of tougher to predict. I don't know if the guy made a statement. You know what I mean? I don't know. None of us know.
Yum.
If he did make a statement, I would fully anticipate that they will file a motion to suppress the statement, depending on what the circumstances were. You know, is he claiming that he lawyered up and they kept talking to him? You know, whatever the case may be, like, none of us know if he made any kind of statement. We're sitting here completely in the dark.
Sure.
None of us know, you know, just because we don't know. But like anything that they're finding where there can be a Fourth Amendment attack, I have no doubt that Ann Taylor is going to file the motion. So I anticipate there's going to be a lot of motion work. Look, I mean, all of these motions that we've heard thus far are substantive, meaning that you're asking the court to make a ruling of some kind of an issue. But like in terms of really substantive stuff, like where there's an impact on the trial in terms of maybe there's evidence that's going to be precluded from being entered, those battles are all coming and those are going to be the real battles. Like I always tell people, I'm like, man, you know, those are the things they need to televise. That's where the real war is fought in any trial. It's like all we're watching is a culmination. Now, me as a trial attorney for 20 years, I know that the battle is really fought in the pretrial motion phase, not at trial, because everything that's happening now is the fight to find out what's going to get in as evidence and what's going to be excluded as evidence. That's what all the pretrial stuff is about. And that's where you land up, because ultimately what the jury is going to hear is what has been shaken out by the judge, is the gatekeeper of the evidence, who's going to decide what gets in, what doesn't. And at that point, that's all the jury is going to hear. I mean, you hear it in cases all the time. You know, sometimes DNA will get kicked. You know, certain things, like they want to bring in 404 evidence, which is, you know, the bad act stuff. You know, that's always litigated. So, you know, because it's very important in terms of determining what's fair, in terms of giving the defendant that fair trial that we were talking about earlier, that we want to happen. Because if he's convicted, we want it to have been done right.
Sure.
Right? We don't want to go back and do it again. So, yeah, those are all things I anticipate will happen in the future.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.